Welcome to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Coming to you from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria, I'm your host, Kevin S. Fox. Well, welcome to the show. This is episode 15. We call it Wanted, Rhythm Analysts. And true to our concept of doing public geography, we call for your participation in a rhythm analysis of Salzburg. Have you ever thought about or considered that a city could have a unique rhythm all its own? We might call it a vibe, or maybe by some other name, but social scientists actively work with this concept, and it may very well have practical applications for community development and urban renewal. Our call for participation here is to see if you would share some of the windows into the rhythms of Salzburg. Please listen tonight as I speak with Professor Rina Tiwari from Curtin University in Perth, Australia, who has engaged a number of communities with this concept as we look at how to go about doing rhythm analysis. Her book, Space, Body, Ritual, Performativity in the City, is one of few texts really committed to working with this concept, and we use it as a starting point for the Salzburg Rhythm Analysis Project. Check out the website, too, for more details to see how you can participate. So let's go and talk with Professor Tiwari. So we have online, then, from Perth, Professor Rina Tiwari, whose work on rhythm analysis has really sort of opened up a new discussion, I think, in the world of geography and urban studies. And thank you for joining us on Geographical Imaginations.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure to join you guys.
Yeah, thank you. I guess the first thing that we can talk about is the book and the project that's behind the book, because it takes place, you're in Australia, but the project itself takes place in India. Can you tell us a little bit about that, the background of the project?
Yes, the book is called Performativity in Cities Through Space, Body and Ritual. And actually, it elaborates on the relationship of spaces and bodies, you know, how our bodies inhabit the spaces, how they relate to the spaces through their rituals or their everyday acts. And this is where the whole idea of performance in the cities or the design of the cities based on the performances come in. As you said, this project was initiated in Australia, where I actually talk about quite a lot of case studies from India. So this was an exploration of the ideas of the East vis-a-vis the West. And here I've explored the relationship of space, body, and ritual through the idea of rhythm analysis. Rhythm analysis, taking it as a tool to understand the spaces, to understand the issues in the spaces, to represent the issues, to convey those issues to the users of the spaces, get their reflections, and then design the spaces accordingly.
Right. So your background is a little bit in urban planning. I'm hearing that in terms of the design part, or urban design, the design part of the city.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what is that interaction, I guess, between the design and the body? Can you tell us a little bit more about that and maybe how rhythm analysis helps us get to that?
Yes, I think in order to understand this relationship between the body and the design of spaces, it's important to understand how the spaces work. What are the inherent characteristics of the spaces? And to understand that, we have to understand the rhythms which are there in the space, the rhythms which can be visible in the space, which can be invisible and need to be unveiled in that particular space. So I guess if we talk about rhythm, exactly what we mean by that, at a very early age, I think we get introduced to this term rhythm through its association with music. And we understand the placement of sound in time, the pattern or the regular recurrence of the lows and the highs, you know, all these oppositions of verticality, horizontality in sound and so on, which is created. And we also have an understanding of rhythm in poetry through the placement of words, generating a pattern, sound or meaning. Then we come to the rhythms of our bodies, which are generated by our timed movement in space. And this bodily rhythm might be constructed while our bodies are engaged in the everyday act, say, for example, walking, or during an extra everyday act for some, say, for example, dancing. So these are external rhythms, while there are some that are internalized, like our heartbeat or breathing. So this is the way we can understand rhythms very generally. And based on this whole idea of rhythm, the ordinary meaning of rhythm is an extended meaning of spatial rhythm.
You mentioned, and you mentioned walking on the show. We're I think one of the themes that we really like is one of the things that we explore is this a different sort of geographical imagination, a different understanding of a landscape when you walk through it, or a space, a city. I don't see much difference between those. But does walking through a city allow one to engage with the rhythm of the city in a different way?
Absolutely. Walking in the city is, I think, the best way to understand the rhythm of the city or rhythm in the city. But that doesn't mean that we can't understand the rhythm while we are driving.
Right.
Because driving on the road will give you an experience of a completely different set of rhythm, which is existing in the city and which we really need to be aware of as well. But definitely walking is a very good way of understanding the rhythms. I think in terms of rhythms, if we extend that meaning to the spatial rhythm, while we are walking or while we are driving, while we are just sitting and having a cup of coffee in an urban plaza, in a cafe, we always have a tendency to describe the space in words like vibrant or dull, activated or calm. It could be peaceful, meditative or dynamic space. And these kinds of spatial rhythmic structures based on these kind of oppositions are always influenced by tangible and intangible elements. And while we are walking or driving or just sitting, it's really easy to experience and become aware of those tangible elements. So tangible elements could involve levels of activities. Say, for instance, an urban plaza can have different rhythm at different times because the level of activity is different during early morning hours, or at lunchtime it would be different, peak time it would be different. And then again, types of uses can affect the rhythm. Like, for example, a residential neighborhood will have a different rhythm to a commercial area. Number of people occupying the space will add in yet another dimension to the rhythm. So these tangible elements can also include, say, for example, the physical design elements like the surrounding architecture, the materials used. And I always, while walking, I have always noticed that a simple pathway can become rhythmic in the way it is paved or the material that is used to pave it. I have noticed that I like to align my steps with the regularly spaced joint lines of the pavers. And this usually happens during my leisure walks while I'm noticing the environment and I'm kind of much more in tune with it. So, these are very kind of tangible elements. whereas there are others which are intangible, which lend to rhythmic construction. See, for example, the history of the place or memories that people carry of that place with them. There could be other things like the hidden politics in the place. Say, for instance, a space can be inclusive or it can exclude certain group of people. And this completely changes the way the same space is experienced by different groups. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting the way rhythms can be experienced by individuals, by different group of people, at different times of the day, and so on.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode.
This leads us, I guess, to this idea of that multiplicity. There's no way of saying there's just, this is the rhythm of Salzburg, so to speak, or Varanasi, or different places that you've studied. But there are these multiple rhythms that some perhaps dominate more than others. And this is something, I guess, picking up from reading Henri Lefebvre's rhythm analysis, kind of one of the major theorizers of this idea of rhythm analysis, is that sometimes there are some rhythms that are more dominant than others. How does that play out in the city, that the dominant rhythm versus perhaps other rhythms that exist but are less dominant? And what does that even mean to be dominant?
Absolutely. I think I completely agree with what you are saying in terms of the dominant rhythms. And the dominant rhythms are those which are kind of collective rhythms, which can be experienced by the majority of the people, you know, similar to the collective memory of a place. You know, these are collective rhythms of that particular place or a city. And that actually defines the character of the place, identity of the place. But then there are individual rhythms, which are based on individual memories of that particular place. I'll just give you an example of, you know, me and my husband. We were visiting friends in another area, in another suburb, a very posh residential area in Perth. And then while we were driving on the street, we came on this lovely opening from where you could have a look at the beautiful flowing river. You know, there was a small space where you could park your car. Mm-hmm. And so we parked our car and came out. But within 5 minutes, we had a couple of neighboring residents coming out on some pretext, mainly to see what's happening, who we were, and so on. So the point is that here we were experiencing a public place. And what we had experienced was the calmness and the serenity of the river. So the rhythm was, you know, about calm place, very meditative kind of a place. There was this wow factor in that place, which immediately changed. And now it had shifted to becoming an uncomfortable, confronting, and unwelcome space. So the rhythms completely shifted. It was the same space, but within 5 minutes, the rhythms changed. So I think it's very much to do with how the bodies engage in the space, how the bodies behave in the space, what kind of relationship they have with the space.
Right. Now, that shift, I mean, I guess I really like that example because I think a lot of people might experience that. And what is the shift? Why is there... Do those people have a different claim to that space there because they live there? Is that part of it? And is that part of a collective way of thinking around, certainly in the world where private property exists, is that sort of part of the code, so to speak, the way we do things? And so immediately their claim and the rhythm that they bring to that equation? Is that how that becomes dominant, or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think their claim to the space, since they were living in that particular area, so yeah. Although it was a public space, it was free to all. It was next to the river, so the river everybody wanted to visit, so it was free to all kind of a space.
Sure.
But since the residents were living in that area, you know, there is this kind of a perception that, yes, we have the claim to that place.
It's so their
that
amenity.
Whole idea yeah. of the sense of ownership actually filtered in and changed that rhythm of the space.
Hmm. Yeah. We're getting here. We're getting at this idea of, I think, unpacking this idea of rhythm. Do you dare try to define it? I mean, is rhythm not meant to be defined, or could we have a working definition of what we mean by rhythm?
The working definition, I would say, is the structure or a pattern which emerges in the space based on its relationship to the time and its relationship to the body. So that is where, you know, the structure which is constructed because of the interaction of space, time, and body, in, you know, put very simply, is what we would call a rhythm, and very easy to understand through music, as I said earlier on.
Yeah.
But I think in order to unpack it, you have to have a bodily engagement with the space. It's really hard to unpack a rhythm while you are sitting external to it, and when you have not lived it, when you have not experienced the space, then it becomes really impossible to actually understand it. So for rhythm analysis to occur, I think a thorough bodily engagement with the space becomes essential.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, there are kind of two phases to it. First is when you have to completely be in the space, be one with the space, open yourself to it, hear the sounds, smell the smells, just walk there, you know, touch the things and so on. So just be one with the space. So after that, after the total immersion, comes the stage of reflection. What exactly is the pattern? What exactly is the structure in that space? And for that reflection to happen, you have to come out of it. You have to be exterior to that space. That is the process where you put the hat of an analyst and reflect on the pattern and structure that you just experienced.
And so as an academic, that's when you kind of step back and sort of reread your theory a little bit and maybe try and make some bigger claims about that experience of being in the rhythm, that sensory experience, that bodily experience, whether it's what we might call performativity or just really being there. It sounds like there's this, in the way you describe that, there's this, it's the heightened awareness. And it's being open to that heightened awareness of the so many things going really on around you. That can go into, in some ways, forming and formulating that structure and how that structure, you know, the wheels of that structure move in some ways, it sounds like.
Absolutely, Kevin. I think, you know, that the term that you said, heightened experience, I think that is the key here. And it's not that we as geographers, urban designers, or, you know, academics can only understand this. I think everyone, every person, every user of the space is being a rhythm analyst all the time.
Yeah.
It's just that they are able to cover only the first aspect of living the rhythm. They don't sit back and analyze, you know, why did that space, if it is vibrant, you know, what kind of a structure it had, what gave rise to that vibrancy and so on. So that falls in our laps. But basically, you know, involuntarily, everyone is doing or everyone is involved in this rhythm analysis process.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Geographical Imaginations is an hour-long radio essay program broadcast monthly from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria. This public geography project presents a geographical or spatial way of thinking about our relationships with the worlds we inhabit and co-create. Each episode takes a theme, or perhaps a question, and explores it through an interactive dialogue with different texts and voices. For more information about the show, check out the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode. If we were to, I don't know, if you were to give like a workshop or write a workbook, so to speak, for someone, for the everyday rhythm analyst, what might be, let's start with your, I like that you have the two steps. What would be some of the suggestions for step one? First, even someone, while we all probably do that, have that sensory experience of the city, not everyone might be engaged in it consciously. So what are some of the things, what are some of the sites even that you might suggest someone go to engage in that city, in their city, in their space, their place, to then experience that rhythm? What would you suggest?
Since rhythms can only be experienced by the body, I think it become the first step, I would say, is to develop an understanding of our own body rhythms.
Yeah.
And a technique called body scan has always worked for me, where actually, you know, you close your eyes and focus on each part of your body. And while taking uniform deep breaths, you run a kind of a mental scan from head to toe, feeling the air, listening to the sounds, feeling the pressure of the chair on which you're sitting, or the weight of clothes that you're wearing. This is just a technique of opening up your body, you know, to the environment, becoming more aware of the environment. And
it sounds like placing the body. Sorry, I was just going to say, it sounds like you're placing the body. You're actually feeling what place it's in, feeling the clothes, feeling the chair, and really getting a sense of where you are in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then you further develop it more by becoming aware of the environment while engaged in your everyday acts, as I said earlier, walking or cycling or driving. And, you know, sometimes I think that even while we are driving or walking these days, we have all of our phones on and the music on and so on. And that actually interrupts that kind of relationship that you want to establish with the space, because you are actually avoiding or not engaging with the original sounds of the space. And sound is one important thing as well. So I think, you know, those small little things really matter. And just be with the space and slowly start becoming aware of your environment while you are doing smallest of things, smallest rituals, smallest acts.
Yeah, so there's those everyday little, well, I don't want to say little, because they are repetitive. These are our everyday routines or rituals, as you're saying.
but yet they can offer a window into the rhythmic structure of the place or space in which we find ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think this really becomes important for everyone, for say, example, geographers, urban designers, and planners. It becomes important to be aware of how a place works or does not work before any sort of designing or planning exercise, so that we know. But for doing that, not only do they need to live and unpack the rhythms themselves, but they also need to have a collection of rhythms as understood by everyday users and residents.
Right.
And this collection of rhythms then provides them with an ethnic view or an insider's perspective of the space. And these days, most of the projects which are done, for example, most of my projects, architectural or urban, have been collaborative, where community engagement has been really critical. And what I've found is residents who have the knack of unpacking rhythms have been able to contribute directly and very effectively. So hence, I think besides the professionals, the city professionals, it becomes equally important for citizens or everyday users to live and unveil the rhythms of their city or the places in which they live. And if citizens appreciate contributing and having their voices heard and be included in any decisions which concern their living environments, then becoming a rhythm analyst becomes really essential. I also think that this additionally helps in reconnecting back to our environments,
right,
and developing a sense of pride towards them.
Does it bring about a different sense of belonging to that place then too? Could it be about place making? I mean, can we connect those two?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's about developing a sense of pride, ownership, a sense of belonging, which is so essential in placemaking. And that is why, again, you know, people who call themselves placemakers, you know, the placemaker term has become really popular these days.
Sure, sure.
So we have the whole profession of placemakers who are emerging. And I think for them, it becomes essential not only to get a sense of the vibe of that place themselves, not only to, you know, have that understanding of the rhythms in that place themselves, but to get that collection from the users as well. So get all the views, all different types of collective and individual views.
Yeah, and you use the term vibe. I think that's a word that a lot of people would probably use more so than rhythm. And just in me, in everyday conversations or in different sort of media, there's this agreement, I think, that every city has or every place has its own vibe, right? And I think I try to think of that as almost being the same thing as rhythm. Do you see them as being different, or is that pretty much the same thing?
I think that the rhythms give a vibe to the place.
Okay.
The rhythms and vibe, I would say, are different. So a place is vibrant. That's the vibe of the place, but that's not the rhythm of the place. There are certain rhythms based on the activities which are happening in the place, the number of people who are using the place and so on, the design of the place and so on, which gives that kind of regularity or structure, which then gives the feeling of vibrancy and so on in that particular place. So I think vibe and rhythm are essentially different.
Okay, so different, but maybe one leads to the other. So they're connected in some ways, but very,
absolutely,
but
connected,
very different.
Yeah.
You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. To find out more about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. To give some feedback or suggestion for a future episode, go to the comments section on the website. Or go to the blog and enter into the conversation.
If we were to go out and we're out in the city, we're walking around, we're sitting on benches, we're, you know, driving around even as well, getting a sense of the city. What does the citizen rhythm analyst do next? What is the sort of that second step to sit back, and how would you what kind of process happens here when you are thinking about those rhythms and trying to better understand the structure, their structure, in the city?
So as a professional, what you would want to do is understand the place, and then understand the place through the rhythms, and then represent those rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
And the representation can happen in variety of ways. You can represent through sound or visuals or body performance or installations. And the representation is basically for a couple of reasons. And I'll give you an example here. We did this rhythm analysis project in East Perth, which is in Western Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a recently redeveloped and gentrified area in Western Australia. And what we did was to the two phases, you know, which I described earlier, the rhythm immersion and rhythm reflection.
Right.
We added another two phases. So the third phase was rhythm projection, where we said, okay, what are the issues in the area? What is missing in this area, right? What are the missing rhythms in the area? What are the design opportunities that were missed during the redevelopment to make the place safe, vibrant, and inclusive? So that is the rhythm projection. So we projected a scenario in the study area by introducing the missing rhythms.
Hmm.
And then what we did was, the fourth stage was rhythm performance, where we performed the projected rhythms in the study area. So the story or narrative, which was to be presented as a performance, had a metaphorical association with that particular place. For example, you know, East Perth streets were pretty dead, didn't have any activities in them, and they were really indicative of the homogeneous kind of environment which is brought because of gentrification. And in order to convey that, the performers used morph suits to dress up as ghosts, representing the deadness of East Perth. So what happened was, in the rhythm projection stage, we choreographed the performative acts that reflected the quality of each and every spot of the spaces that we had selected. This proposal was then performed on the site during a time when residents were going about their everyday business. And it involved a participation of the residents, of the users, of the visitors, of the people on the street. And there was a general interest and curiosity raised among the users, with few people coming up to the ghosts with questions and wanting to have their pictures taken with them. And there were few for whom it was a spectacle, and they followed the ghosts from one space to another. So in a way, those missing rhythms, the missing vibrancy, was added due to that performance. And interestingly, the resident users challenged the performers' preconceptions of the impact of gentrification and the architectural language of the area. So it was a really good tool for us as professionals to actually understand the user's point of view, the resident's point of view.
Yeah.
In some instances, the locals commented on the empty space and the lack of place identity. So there we had synergy in terms of the way we were thinking about that place and the residents were thinking about the place. In short, I think this project enabled users of the public spaces in East Perth to revisit their lived experiences in it. And a kind of a conversation was initiated around the prevailing issues of that place and the possible solutions. That was the aim of the project, and rhythm analysis became a tool to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the performance, and I'm listening and I'm thinking, the performance could bring to light one of the invisible sort of rhythms that everyone is talking about. And it sounds like in this community, everyone probably was thinking, oh gosh, the street is dead. There's nothing going on here. And it's actually bringing in a visible way that collective thinking that maybe prior to the workshop, maybe not everyone, well, the people would have been in agreement, but they weren't talking about it. And so it brings those issues to light in some ways. Could you also see a performance like this maybe then going a different direction in proposing what a newer rhythm, or recycling an old one, what that could be like? So I guess the question is the rhythm analyst, could the rhythm analyst be a rhythm maker at the same time?
Yes, and actually in this particular project, the rhythm analyst was a rhythm maker, because they introduced completely new rhythms in the space by being the ghosts, activating space in a way. And these spaces were never activated to that extent in the everyday. So that was a unique thing, and people experienced as to what it would be if there were these kinds of activities generated by, say, for example, mixed use or mixed demographics in that space and so on. So
it was
it
too,
makes
right.
people think, yeah. and it helps people to visualize how the space could be designed, and to actually come to terms with, yes, these are the issues and we need solutions to it, instead of just taking things for granted.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode.
So there's this whole practical aspect to rhythm analysis that it doesn't need to just be in academic sort of conferences talking about what Henri Lefebvre meant about rhythm analysis, but yet it has this practical application that could really engage. I mean, going through your steps here of immersion, reflection, projection, and performance, it could really take people, invite them into the inner workings, the rhythmic of the rhythmic structures of their city, if they hadn't thought about that before, or if they had, it could actually sort of formalize that process for them.
You're so correct here, Kevin, and it certainly does that. And a step further, it actually brings to light the issues in front of the government agencies. Mm. And a very similar kind of an exercise which we did in India, in where walkability is a big concern for pedestrians. There are no amenities at all, and there is absolutely bad condition of pathways, and the motorists never stop on the zebra crossings, and you know, the motorist behavior is bad and so on. So we were doing this project in New Delhi, in one of the areas where pedestrian amenities lacking and walkability was an issue, and the residents were just going about their everyday saying that, okay, you know, this is what happens, you know, the people will always park on the pedestrian pathway, so we have to just do a kind of a leapfrogging or walk around it and so on. So we did that. We did this project where we actually identified what the issues were. And then we performed those issues through body installations. And it was interesting that people followed the performance from one place to another. And then we went around and talked to the people in the audience about, okay, what do you think just happened? And do you think these are the issues? And so on and so forth. Interestingly, by doing this, people became aware of their right to the space, right to the pedestrian space, which they had completely forgotten. And also because their development agency's office was within that area, we got quite a lot of publicity through newspapers and so on. So the government agency was really kind of alerted, and they said, okay, let us read through the report, let us look at the recommendations, and we'll take things on board. So I think it really does, it has a good practical outcome, rhythm analysis, not just an academic exercise, but definitely a practical outcome.
Right, and it sounds like very much challenging, in this case, a rhythm that maybe became so routine and then through that so dominant, that had in some ways, not necessarily support, but was accepted by the government officials. And so it challenges, it's a way to challenge when the dominant rhythm might be connected to official policy too, it sounds like. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And it had become so dominant that not only the government agency was accepting it, but the people themselves had forgotten their right to the space, their claim to the pedestrian space. So I think in order to make people aware of their rights, in order to educate the public in that manner, again, this can be used as a tool by geographers, designers, architects, and other professionals.
You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. To find out more about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. To give some feedback or suggestion for a future episode, go to the comments section on the website, or go to the blog and enter into the conversation.
If we're to embark on this rhythm analysis of the city of Salzburg here, any advice in terms of things that we might read besides maybe Henri Lefebvre's rhythm analysis? Look at your book as well, Performativity in the City. But any other things that you might think could help us prepare ourselves for those steps of immersion and perhaps maybe even reflection even more so?
I have visited Salzburg. It's a beautiful city. I would say it's a very touristic place as well. So the rhythms which are contributed by the tourists becomes really essential, apart from the rhythms which are experienced by the everyday residents in Salzburg. So I guess for the professionals, this pretty old text now, Ari's The Tourist Gaze, which is again very interesting read, and it talks about the tourist perspective of particular place and how they understand the city, how they understand the rhythms and how they contribute to the rhythms.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good read, apart from, of course, Lefebvre's rhythm analysis, which is in the critique of cities, I think.
Yeah, I think
and social interaction of space.
Right, and I think that's an important thing, that what I've found in cities, especially here, where tourism really has. Well, there's a bit of a love-hate relationship when a city's very touristic, in the sense that it receives more, you know, Salzburg receives more people each year than it's much greater than its population, right? So it's a population of 150,000, but there's over a million. I don't actually have the number right in front of me right now, but there's certainly over a million visitors each year, and so there's probably a feeling from some people to try and just ignore that and say that's not actually part of the rhythm of our city. And it really becomes then this push and pull, I think, about trying to define a rhythm of the city. And yet I think maybe it's more beneficial to really kind of, like we were saying, unpack the bundle of rhythms, that there are a number of different rhythms. And tourism is no doubt one of a very important one. And I think it really needs to be looked at, because so there's a calendar of tourism, right? There's ups and highs and lows, high season, low season. There's times and certain weeks even that are much more, there's a flood of tourists, that other weeks there's really none. And so there's a whole schedule of that and calendar of that I think affects the way, say, the old part of the city works.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in a city like Salzburg, the tourist rhythms cannot be ignored.
No.
And the tourist rhythms actually work and coexist with the everyday rhythms of the residents, and actually influence those as well. And the everyday rhythms are tied or dependent, you know, economically on the tourist rhythms as well. So definitely one cannot ignore, or one cannot completely, you know, make the...
A separation of the
experience. Yes, complete separation of that. It's
yeah.
very much a part. And as I said earlier, any insertion of a body in that particular space, irrespective of whether it's a tourist body or a resident body, you know, that really affects the way the space is being used, affects the way the emotions emerge in that particular space. So definitely the tourists have to be taken into account.
Yeah. So I guess this would be a good place to start then, I suppose, I think, is really looking at the rhythms produced by tourism. I think that interaction, like you're saying, whether it's economic or otherwise, between the so-called local rhythms and then this sort of international rhythm that maybe gets produced, not even just by tourism, but the fact that this is the city of Mozart. And so it's on that international map of being part of the international landscape of what Western classical culture or something. And so it's that too. It's not just the scenes from The Sound of Music that I think bring people here, but it's also the fact that it is connected to this older sort of the classical music tradition that Mozart was very much a part of. Well,
Definitely, and as I mentioned earlier, the history of that particular place and the collective memory of that particular place plays such a big role in contributing to the rhythm or the character. And you mentioned, Kevin, about the conflict between the tourists and the residents in terms of which rhythm is dominating or which rhythm is being dominated. So I guess when we start analyzing or unpacking the tourist rhythm bundles and the resident rhythm bundles and see how they coexist or relate to each other, that is where, you know, it could be a way forward for us to decide what is dominating at the moment, what kind of balance we would like to achieve, and so on.
Hmm. So it's, that's, yeah, that's one of those sort of key points or nodes that we could really, I've mentioned it before to other people here. Like, what about, are there windows into the rhythmic structure of Salzburg? And I would have to suggest, and I think that this is one of those key points, windows or nodes, any way we want to describe that, to get into a little bit of how current modern day Salzburg works, you know, its rhythmic structure. I want to thank you for sharing all of this with us. This is a really interesting starting point for us, I think. And rhythm analysis, I think, is a tool that opens up a different way of thinking about the city, the body in the city, and spaces. And I think your work has really been at the front of really trying to show how that can be practically applied too, and really through, it sounds like through the workshops that you've done, that there's been some success there in terms of engaging people in, I think, expanding that geographical imagination. So I wanted to thank you for sharing that with us.
Thanks, Kevin. It was a pleasure being on your program. Thank you very much.
So there you have it, the kickoff to the Salzburg Rhythm Analysis Project, something we'll run through here on Geographical Imaginations and through the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Check us out there for any details about how you can participate and share your windows into the rhythms of Salzburg. I'd like to thank again Rina Tuari for joining us over Skype from Australia, and we look forward to future episodes in the next coming months. So stay tuned and look forward to hearing from you about the rhythms of Salzburg. Take care. Ciao.